about Star Wars.
Really?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the REScreening.com podcast. I'm your host, REScreening.com's own Mark Eastman, and with me, as always, is co-host extraordinaire Shane Lunder.
Hello. It's not our show.
I had to cough.
No, I know, but it's almost like you held it.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. This week, The Girl on the Train, which managed to lead a really slow box office. Obviously we want to be able to say, hey, it won the box office, because if you're making the movie,
sure,
that's what you want. That's as long as you get to have that headline. Yeah. But it was like 24 million or something. I mean, that's like third place good weekends, or
right.
You know. There were so many. I'd like to get a chart of that, actually, like every week,
right?
Every movie that won the week and how much money it made, because
yeah.
You know, I saw the thing and I'm like, okay, it led the box office, and then 24 million. Well, hooray.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
like Westworld getting 3 million viewers.
Right.
and then you think back to days when shows really had viewers.
Yeah.
Know? It's funny because I bring that up because somebody emailed me about the fact that we were talking about like growing pains,
getting tons
right. of numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
And they had looked up some stuff.
Yeah.
Because apparently they said, what?
Right.
How
there
much or
big.
Whatever?
Right.
Like, is it really comparatively that big? And growing pains. A completely goofy show,
right?
That, you know, today would probably not last a whole season.
Right. Right.
I mean, maybe it would, because they're.
I don't know.
Maybe it would now.
Maybe on the network.
Maybe it would now, because now there's kind of this going back to like 80s
right.
style things that are getting play, because TV Land is coming out with
sure.
a bunch of trying to make new shows, but sort of feel like 80s shows,
yeah.
And you got like, you know, like that. Still standing
right.
show that, you know, whatever. So maybe it would, who knows. But anyway, the point was Growing Pains in its height was getting more viewers every week consistently
right.
throughout the season than American Idol has ever had.
Right.
And it was not the number one show.
Right. It was always like three or four.
It was
never top.
It was not even that big of
right.
a show. And it got more than, and American Idol is like the biggest thing ever.
And that's been on TV for,
right?
Like ever too. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. So there's your numbers report
right.
on TV, and
that's just,
and what a crazy world it is. And
yeah.
trying to just think about what the big networks have been going through.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
As all the cable net, as the universe changes for TV, and you've got people, you know, in the 80s and 90s
yeah.
before you get the massive onslaught of all the channels who are getting these numbers. This is their job.
Right.
They understand how things work.
Yeah.
And then boom, now we've got to still somehow pay everyone.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
whatever, right. Get advertisers.
For me, it's, you know, we lived through it. We don't remember it because of a Wikipedia page or a, you know, classic TV channel. We were through it. And when I hear of these things, when I remember these things, I remember so many TV shows, even the really horrible, horrid ones. But I have to try to remember what played opposite Growing Pains on the other channels that was bad enough
right.
to not beat the show. Because, you know, I know a lot of people have an affinity for certain niche shows. I never understood Growing Pains. There was
right.
never any reason for me in whatever age I was to watch it. Yet it was huge.
Except that you had no other choice, really.
Right. There were only two other options.
Right.
And
right.
maybe one of them was, you know, like a news show, but I don't
right.
think so.
And, or
I think they
or
were just shows. And I'm thinking how bad those shows had to suck
but,
to make Growing
But,
Pains
you know,
a,
it's
winner.
Actually awesome. And, you know, we won't talk about this forever, but
all day.
It's actually awesome if you go back and look through
yes,
the schedules,
the yes.
like look through the lineup in, you know, the mid 80s
sure,
or
like
whatever.
Thursday night.
And
yeah.
it's, it's like the networks mostly agreed that they would, you know, this, you'll be comedy during this time. We'll have drama, you know, somebody else will have a movie or a news show or something that's in between. But the shows, you were almost never, like, consistently all through the entire 80s, right? You were almost never at a point where you were going, I like that comedy and I like that comedy too. Right. Which one am I going to watch? Because they just,
it never happened.
It didn't matter. Right. So if you wanted to watch comedy or you didn't want to watch, like Matlock or, whatever, I mean, you had no choice. And you got your show got the ratings because it's a comedy that's on.
And I just remember
like listening to George Costanza, right? You're watching it because it's on.
I remember how amazing it was when Fox took the air and how hard hit certain shows just plummeted.
Right.
There
right.
was a fourth option.
Because there was something else.
There was
to
always
do.
A fourth option, but nobody really watched MPBN or PBS
or
wherever it
like
was.
Like UHF.
Whatever,
or...
Yeah. Whatever it was. You watched ABC, NBC or CBS. Yeah. And then when Fox came on, and I remember like Married with Children had like crushing numbers. That show was different because it was crude and very low budget and lewd and like very sarcastic. But the shows that it took out shouldn't have been at the top anyway.
All the other networks went.
It was just funny. So the
bonkers,
more options you get, the more crazy things are.
Anyway, okay, The Girl on the Train. Now
you got fact checked through email on Growing Pains. I love it.
I did.
I think that's great.
And I lived to tell the tale.
Yeah. did the box office, real quick before we switched, because you mentioned it, did I read it wrong? Did Birth of a Nation really do that bad? Like
yeah.
it was only like
yeah.
5 million, 6
it
million.
Did,
I mean,
it did crazy bad.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Bad. Like that studio's collapsing bad.
It did massively bad. And not only that, but there were apparently some places on the internet, and I haven't fact checked them.
Yeah.
Right. But some places on the internet are reporting that they have done whatever research they did. I don't know. They did exit polls at the theater or whatever.
Right. I love it.
But they are saying that it, specifically comes down to the director and his attitudes and his not saying that, not being apologetic or whatever, however he's portrayed or whatever people think about him is seriously having an effect on how it's doing at the box office. Now, whether that's true or not, like I said, I have no idea.
Who knows?
But
the first thing that I thought of, I mean, we're not talk about it more than a second, but the first thing I thought of is that it's 2 months early. Like, why are they releasing that outside of post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas Oscar push?
Right,
like,
right.
I don't get that, but anyway.
Anyway, so The Girl on the Train. So this week, we're not really doing any news. Because there's no fantastic news except that, Divorce aired on HBO and that's actually a really cool show.
Yeah.
I was surprised to find that show really fun. Tonight, I'm pretty sure American Housewife is on ABC, but still a lot of the talk is just the new shows and that's what people are talking about. And the, next episode of Westworld and, whatever. But anyway, there's not a lot of staggeringly interesting news. So I thought we would do just a run through quickly of, movies that are coming up.
Yeah, that's good.
And I don't know, people seem to like it when we do that. So let us know if you don't,
I
guess.
I look forward to them.
But here's what I thought we would do instead of our usual fare is that we would give our ratings for The Girl on the Train. And then not talk about it for a while.
That's okay.
And then we could talk about
That's probably better for us.
Then all the Girl on the Train fans know to stop listening right away. And, we do that for our listeners.
We
so
hope.
We,
yeah, that's good.
We trick them into all not right, listening to
that.
Us anymore. So The Girl on the Train, Emily Blunt, obviously a gigantic best-selling novel that everyone loved and we didn't read.
Right. That's our first disclaimer, which
The second disclaimer is I think the trailers for this movie are pretty good. They obviously can't give a lot away.
Yeah.
But, they kind of like hooked me into wanting to see the movie. And I don't think that they're, tricking you in any way. And you go in and go, this is not the movie I thought it was. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I thought the trailers work pretty well. So if you go see the trailer, you have a good idea what you're in for. Yeah. As far as rating, I don't know if you have written down my rating yet.
I've jotted it down.
You might be surprised because I had to think. You might be surprised a little bit anyway.
Okay.
Because I did, you know, have to at the end of the day make kind of a decision about this one. We were talking about this one.
Yep.
And so we already talked about it, so it's probably not that hard to figure out my rating.
Right.
But at the end, I had to give this one.
You might have flipped.
I didn't exactly flip because I was on both sides of the fence from the beginning. So it's hard to flip.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I had to give this one 3.5.
Ooh, I gave you 4.
Ah, okay.
I'm not that far.
Well,
I figured you would like it just a little better because when we were discussing it, which we'll do more after we do our thing.
So people know, right? When we walked out, I would have probably given this like a 6.
Yeah, and
somewhere around there.
I think I would have given it maybe a 4. And now you got worse or better? I got a little better. I went to 4.5.
Not much
better, but I think it's just below average.
Right.
And especially for the genre film that it is in, just a little below it, but we'll talk more about it.
Yeah.
And why later.
Right. So now you know the rating.
I thought you were going to go.
Now you're hooked.
Yeah, right.
Now you're hooked and you can listen later. So just to go through, first of all, next week we'll be doing The Accountant because that's a big thing next week, right? But just so you have an idea of the very strange few weeks that are coming up.
Are you looking forward to that?
The Accountant?
Yeah.
I am, really.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
And I almost feel like I'm looking forward to it almost like despite the things I know about
and not really
because of the things that I saw. Like the trailers. The trailers seem like the movies kind of trying to be odd for odd's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not like a big sell for me.
Right.
It's just here's the story, but how can we make it a little weirder? Or how can we make the characters a little more odd just because I want them to be odd.
Right.
And so that doesn't exactly,
I haven't been able
wow
to see
me, right?
the first trailer again that I saw for it, which was a lot of him as a kid being really gifted. And it looked more beautiful minded than Jason Bourne-ish. Now it just looks like an autistic Jason Bourne.
They walk you through like his life a little bit.
And I really thought that was going to be a different movie. And then when I saw the second trailer, I was kind of like paused.
Right.
Like, that's not the
like,
first
wait,
trailer
what?
I saw at
right.
all.
Right.
So I don't even
how
know
are those
what
the same
right?
movie? Yeah.
And now I understand that it's going to be more like the action film. Like he's more of the professional, but he's got like the crazy mind.
Right. And we may show you that stuff from the first trailer real quick,
right.
but
it's not really about.
Right.
And
right.
I really
right.
genuinely thought, you know, he's going superhero film, you know, at Ben Affleck. Now he's going beautiful mind. Then he'll go back to superhero. Like he's going to do these staggered
right.
things. And now I was totally wrong, but I was confused.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of like, I don't know what film this is.
It is a little weird.
But
I'm
looking forward to
it. The Accountant is clearly the big, big thing right next week.
Right.
But if you are desperate to stay away from it or want other options, right? Also next week is Max Steel.
I kind of want to see that too.
I don't understand this movie at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand where did this come from to be a movie at all? It's a movie based on a toy.
Yeah.
And it's a movie based on a toy that's not based on something else.
Right. It's just
it's not like there's a comic and they made a toy.
I know.
It's just a toy. And here's the weird thing.
Yeah.
This is some like weird black hole of the kid world that somehow has completely eluded me.
Right.
Because I had never heard of it.
Yeah.
And I have lots of kids.
Right. And they're different ages. So you had.
Right. And I've got like a big span.
Yeah.
And I'm in the toy store a lot.
I wander around in the toy store. Yeah.
And I had never heard of this toy. Yeah. And then I find out, I'm like, well, what is this toy?
Right.
Because now I need to know.
Have it. Yeah.
And then I find out it's been around forever.
Yeah.
And no one has ever made any effort to get me to know what it is.
Right.
It's like some weird, like indie, you know,
Sure. Well, it's almost like it's a foreign toy. Like it's big
right,
in Europe,
right, right.
Not here. And it's never been here, but now it's kind of coming.
Right.
You know,
it's really weird. And the other thing that I think is a little weird about this is I could really see this from what I've seen of the movie and the trailers and,
right.
and what it's supposed to be about and all that. I could really see this being a really popular, like straight to video movie,
right?
Because it doesn't look like we're trying that hard,
right.
And it looks like the story is really for kids.
Yeah,
not in a bad way.
No,
not
straight. For
not
kids.
That means
yeah.
that it's bad or stupid, but really for kids.
Right.
And yet, here it comes in theaters, and who's going to this?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't get that movie. It looks even like a moderately interesting idea for a story.
Yeah.
Except that it's mixing in like this being a superhero-ness with this weird robot alien thing from like Batteries Not Included. Like,
yeah.
like we're going back like 30 years to
You're
figure
curious.
Out what to do.
You're that. Curious. We might have to see this.
I'm so not curious. Anyway, but if you have, I mean, yeah. if you have kids and you're
right,
and you're looking
you're,
for something, if
that.
You if you've got the right age demographic, whatever thing
right.
going on, then you've got a good option. Also, next week is Certain Women,
yep.
which is, so far as I can tell, getting really mixed reviews.
Oh yeah,
it, like really love it or hate it. Not a lot of people saying, eh. You
right.
know, it's okay, and maybe you'll like it. It's
yeah.
Kristen Stewart, Michelle Williams. It's like this rambling anthology of three different women's stories at a certain time and their struggle and
yeah.
and basically sort of watching unhappy people for the sake of watching unhappy people. It's not
sounds like Girl on a Train.
It's not a fun movie.
Yeah.
From what I hear. I haven't
oh,
seen
right.
it.
Oh right.
But anyway, that's that option. So if you've got you know, this we're back in the 80s on TV. You've got The Accountant, Max Steel, or Certain Women. You have to watch something, pick one of those, right? So,
right. There you go.
And they're very different options. We're going to save
yeah.
the box office from anyone having to make too hard a choice.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to pick The Accountant versus Jason Bourne or whatever.
Right.
So
right.
we're making that simple for you. The week after is on the 21st. We've got Jack Reacher, Never Go Back.
Yeah.
So that will clearly be what we see.
Yeah.
That's kind of the biggest release. And also, and you know, I like the first movie.
I'm going to watch it.
I'm interested to see the second movie,
yeah.
but here's the thing. I'm a little nervous about the second movie because Jack Reacher, even though I liked it,
yeah.
it wasn't a great movie or anything. It was
yeah.
just, it was fun and I liked it and,
yeah.
and that kind of thing. Right. But it's also very much the kind of movie that could turn out a really stupid sequel.
Oh, yeah.
It could be like,
might be better than the original.
It could be like, you know, I don't know. We'll give you a bunch of money if you make
right.
another one. Okay. I have
sure,
to come
I'll
up with
that.
An idea
yeah.
then. And somehow I have to make this work for another thing. And the, you know, the story you get out of the trailer, which is not a whole lot, is, you know, kind of a routine story.
Yeah.
You know,
looks, yeah.
you know,
his
friend,
right.
who's his, you know, one of his friends slash contacts
yeah.
in the military, gets framed for something. Now
yeah.
he's got to go save the day and take on the whole military,
right.
I guess,
yeah.
or whatever. And it's just, you know, it's very, it's not like we had to, you know, dig deep in the imagination well
right.
to come up with that. And
yeah.
so then, you know, it could be the kind of movie where we're just knocking something out to knock something out. So maybe it, you know, I don't know. I'm nervous about it.
It looks like it's sold exclusively on Tom Cruise, an action film, you know, his charisma and the fact that he's going to punch people. And actually, okay.
Right.
You know, I'm okay with that. I love that the title is, you know, Never Go Back. Jack Reacher, Never Go Back.
Right.
And yet they're going back.
Never make a sequel.
Like, yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay.
The big.
That'll be good.
that this is actually an interesting week though on the 21st, because there are a lot of options. The next Ouija movie comes out because it's near Halloween and
right.
we have to.
We need
and,
some horror films here.
I have no super no, expectations for that.
Yeah.
Because it's very, it's a very goofy fraternity party night.
Sure.
What you know, whatever kind of movie that you. Not paying attention to really, but you have a bunch of people with you and you want to be scared.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. I don't know. It doesn't look like it's trying to do anything really fantastic. Right. Although a step up maybe from Boo, a Madea Halloween.
The Madea one, yeah. Oh man, you know you'd love it.
And I don't know, people will go see it.
The Tyler Perry stuff is gonna do big.
I have not seen anything Madea that I could stand to watch. So
yeah, I haven't either.
So there you've got
well,
that you've got
any,
that option.
I haven't seen any Madea stuff there. I can beat that.
I haven't
actually had to
enjoy it. So it could be great. So you don't know.
It might be great.
You can't say anything. I saw the first couple.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'd watch parts of
right.
some of the others and everything, and it's just like whatever. And then after the first couple, I'm like, I'm not doing that.
I keep waiting for the one that's based on the Tom Loke film, The Funky Cold Madea.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
That should be, why is that not out?
I don't know. If it comes out now, I'm taking a cut. Tyler Perry
right.
owes me.
That's right. We have your
right.
your name in stone here.
That's right.
So. But then also that week, Keeping Up with the Joneses. Looks a little goofy,
yeah.
but also like it has the potential,
right.
you know, to be a fairly good kind of wacky, zany
yeah.
comedy type thing.
Right.
And it's Gal Gadot's in it, Zach Galifianakis, John Hamm, and it's like the spies move in next door.
Yeah,
and
it's like the Hangover.
It's like the one couple and their new neighbors turn out to be spies,
right.
and hilarity ensues,
sure.
and
right.
you know, whatever.
Okay.
So. But it does look like it could be pretty fun.
I forgot.
And
it'll be okay.
Even though sometimes Zach Galifianakis is like, he can be hit or miss for me. Sometimes
yeah.
I like him, sometimes I go, "Ugh."
Right.
So whichever one shows up for this movie is probably going to be one of the major determining factors of
right.
whether it's any good.
Yeah.
And then still also on the 21st, American Pastoral, which is the Ewan McGregor directed movie that's Dakota Fanning, Jennifer Connelly, and Ewan McGregor also stars in it. And it's this frankly very strange theory of a movie.
Yeah.
But something that, you know, could turn out pretty good. Dakota Fanning is the daughter who like becomes a political activist and you know, does bad things, and then how that tears apart her family
right.
and, you know, whatever
yeah.
comes of that. And it's kind of like a old school looking movie. It
yeah.
looks like what I've seen of it is, you know, it looks like a movie that could have easily come out like, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. I
right.
mean, it's one of those, I don't know, kind of really trying to throw back to the style and sensibilities of people who made movies a really long time
right.
ago, and see what happens if we do that now. Kind of a
I'm
kind
curious
of a thing.
Just because I like Ewan McGregor.
Yeah,
you know,
I
kind of
I like him too, and
see it, what his like talent is behind the lens.
Right,
so that would be kind of neat.
Then on the 28th is Inferno. So
right.
Ron Howard, Tom Hanks.
Did you read that?
You know, the whole thing.
Did you ever
no.
read the Dan Brown stuff?
No, I read one and I was done. I read the first one and I thought, I don't need that. It's,
right.
You know, it's like I read part of the first 50 Shades Gray
right, yeah,
movie.
Right.
And then I
you realized that.
And then
that.
And then I realized that I was really taking more time editing it than reading it.
Right.
So
right.
I said, forget
up.
It.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm just not even the movies of these. You know, I'm just not fascinated by it or whatever. It doesn't have any ability to suck me in.
Yeah.
And the movies so far have felt to me like if you haven't read the book, we don't really care about you.
Right.
We're not interested in actually, in a certain sense, making a movie.
Sure.
Really, we're not.
Right.
Interested in convincing new people, we're just here because the book sold enough and we only need those people and we'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so anyway, they haven't wowed me. This one seems
that'll be the big one for the week, though. You're right.
This one, it's the only thing that comes out. It's like the only even remotely big thing that comes out at all. So everybody wanted to leave that alone, I guess. I don't know what the story is for that.
Huh.
But this one also, it just seems like a weird enough idea that like I'm already lost interest, right? It's you know, he wakes up with the amnesia now, like we don't have enough problems. Now he wakes up with the amnesia and he's got to figure out whatever plot, even though he's getting his memories back. And you know, frankly, I've just had enough amnesia. I mean, I'm it's getting old. And you know, the weird thing, even though I say that, I like Blind Spot. I don't really love it anymore, but I liked it at first,
right?
Because it was like, at least we were doing something with amnesia. At least there was like a point to it other than amnesia.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
Anyway. And, finally, once we get to November, you know, that like I said, that's, the 28th of October. So probably, you know, nobody had another horror movie. So why put anything out right before Halloween? No one's going to go see it anyway. So, but once we get to November, you got Doctor Strange. So, that looks pretty fantastic to me. I don't know. It looks like just the kind of, sidestep from every other average superhero movie that would actually get me really interested. So as long as they did a halfway decent job with that movie from given what I've seen of it so far, and you don't go into the movie and it was all a trick and it's a completely different movie. Then that one should be really pretty fantastic. Then that same week, you've also got Trolls, which looks weird.
I don't even know how to sell that. That's just strange. You just sell that based on like who's in it. You know, it's got Anna Kendrick and Zooey Deschanel
and Justin Timberlake and
Gwen Stefani
animated.
And,
so take your kids to it. It's kind of it's really a movie that's like whatever. It's animated. And look, here's cute things or whatever.
I don't know.
It looks like a strange idea, but I will say, in defense of the movie and my thinking that it's strange, there's been plenty of animated movies in the last, you know, 6 to 7 years or whatever that I thought that looks goofy, and then I loved it. Who knows?
Who can tell?
It could just be awesome. Then also on the 4th, you've got Hacksaw Ridge. A Mel Gibson directed movie with Sam Worthington and Andrew Garfield and tons of other people, actually. That's a movie about World War II army medic who was a conscientious objector and nevertheless got like the Medal of Honor
Civil
or something.
War hero,
I mean, ended up a big time hero, just refused to kill anybody, but still served. And you know, there you go.
That's a weird one because when I see it, I actually like Mel Gibson's movies very much. He understands story, structure, pacing, plot. He gets it all. But that film is so transparent that I know the whole film based on the 45-second spot. Just between this scene and that scene and the next scene in the trailer, there's like 30 minutes. You know, I get that he signs up. They make fun of him. They beat him up. Like, he's really ostracized, but yet he's courageous. He saves them all. They repent. They raise him on their shoulders. They meddle. You know, it's just going to take a long time to see the trailer that I already know everything's going to happen.
It's very straightforward.
I still wanna see it, you know?
And then finally, also on the 4th, Loving, which is it's Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga. And it's the movie about true story. About a interracial couple in Virginia in 1958 who were arrested and
because
put in prison because they got married, which was illegal, and they did it, and that's it. I mean, that's
Did you have down The Arrival, the new Denis Villeneuve? the Amy Adams Alien one? Is that maybe that's after? Maybe that's after the
That
first
might
week
be
then.
The next.
Okay.
The next.
That's
week.
The next one that I'm looking forward to after the Curiosity of Doctor Strange and all the other ones that we've
right.
mentioned. But and that one makes me nervous because I love his films so much in the last few years, from Prisoners, which was my favorite film of the year,
right,
to Sicario, which was right up there. Like
right.
he's a guy who I really love watching his movies. He just reminds me of Christopher Nolan in a way. And then Christopher Nolan did a space epic and I wasn't wild about it.
Right,
I watched
right,
it because
right.
I liked it and I liked what I liked about it. But now he's doing a space epic like Aliens. And I'm like,
right.
Oh man, you're really good on the ground in the world that I live in. Do
right.
those. I don't know. But I'm,
and,
I'm
you,
so
and you know, it's
stuff.
Also, I think it's a interesting comparison since we're just babbling about stuff anyway with
sure.
Christopher Nolan, because, all of the things that I like about both of them
yeah.
and the movies that both of them make are, you know, their abilities when they are in a very certain space, when they
right.
are doing conversations
yeah.
and getting real reactions out of people and
yeah.
putting scenes together in a way that, you know, you're surprised by how effective it is
yeah.
when it might easily not have been. And even
yeah.
with Christopher Nolan, even the Batman movies that I don't like,
yeah.
they're still awesomely directed.
Right.
I would still hire him every
yeah.
day of the week to
right.
film whatever I wanted to
yeah.
film. I might not like the way the story goes or whatever, but they're made
yeah.
amazingly
right.
right, whether you end up liking the film or not. And then here's this one where, you know, like you said, Inception is like his last effort at, you know, not kind of jumping into his own mind
right,
right? And now you're
going into Interstellar. I was like curious and excited and wary.
Yeah, I liked a lot
you know.
Of the idea of Interstellar, but then
yeah.
you watch it and the film felt so much like it wasn't horrible.
Right.
But so much of it felt like, you know, he just likes whatever he does now.
Yeah.
And I'm
cool.
like, ah.
Yeah,
and,
I don't always like it either, but I'm like, that's cool.
Right.
You know.
So, yeah, it is like maybe this is going
to
be.
The Arrival's not on your list, but what is the one you're looking forward to out of all of those? Like, we're looking at the next 5 weeks, you know.
Out of all of those, I have to say the one that I'm most looking forward to is Doctor Strange.
Me too.
Mostly because I have got to know if they do it right. You know,
too.
If they make it work right.
Yeah.
And other than that.
Yeah.
The problem is there are some that I'm kind of interested in, like even The Accountant and Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fairly interested in.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in American Pastoral.
Yep.
But none of them are like, oh yeah, I'm really interested.
Right.
You know, make that come out tomorrow so
sure.
I can see it right now.
Right.
right?
Yeah.
Like
if we could see any of those tomorrow, I would go see Doctor Strange
right.
probably twice.
Right.
Just
that's
for
the that's
curiosity. The
one you'd have to
right.
pick out.
Okay.
Of that. Okay. So that's what's. That's what's in store for you at theaters. Good luck with
right,
that.
Yeah.
Currently on Netflix is, but anyway, so The Girl on the Train and
yeah.
We'll actually get into the movie. So I have to start out with how all of the talking that we did before.
Yeah.
And like I said, so, listeners obviously have no idea
what
that means
did,
or
right.
what to do with that, but
yeah.
I did say that I was probably at like a six, maybe like some like 5 to 6.5 range
yeah.
or something like that, where I was trying to actually figure out, you know, we said at the end, this one is hard because I'm trying to figure out what I think
right.
about all of the stuff and how to cram it all together into one rating. Right.
Yeah.
And
right.
And at the end, what I finally decided about this movie was that I had a lot of problems with it. There are a lot of things that I don't like about it. And I really liked a lot of things about it too. And the thing that really kind of was the nail in the coffin for me was that I was so disappointed in it at the end.
Yeah.
Based on no expectations going in.
Yeah.
The expectations that were disappointed were the ones the film gave me.
Right.
the movie itself was telling me all this stuff that I should like and why I should expect good things out of it.
Yeah.
And then left me totally disappointed. And at the end of the day, I was like, you can't do that.
Right.
I can't give you a high rating. I can't even say that you're average. If you're right. going to set me up just within watching the film
yeah.
for being massively disappointed in you.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean that,
well, when we walked out, it was tricky too, because we were talking about all of the stuff that we'd seen for the last hour and a half. Well, it's like 112, so almost 2 hours. And I just remember feeling that maybe we missed the best version of this, which is maybe the book. And I still
right.
don't know, because
right.
when we were talking somewhat about how one of the things we often say is if that's in your book, then you got to change it, because that's just not working. I didn't start this book and then abandon it, D-Shades or anything, because I couldn't tolerate the bad writing. I only know that it was a big hit, and that a lot of people who fit a demographic of readers, you know, soccer moms or women of that age and ilk who like certain other books would recommend this to their book club. And that's okay. There's not a problem with that. But without knowing whether or not the book is jumping all over the place, you know, it was funny when we were watching it and it kept like time shifting backwards and doing these things.
Right.
And I know how much you hate it. And I just was thinking, he's having a blast with this,
right.
you know, but it just seems so unnecessarily confusing to someone who hasn't read the book and isn't familiar with the book, just to be confusing, just to be opaque and be like stylish in it. And
yeah.
for me, you know, there's only one word, and I think I said this to you, there's only one word that justifies, and that's pretension. Like, to pretend that you're more important or more artistic than something you are. I think if this had just been done in a different way, though I respect why they thought the nonlinear storytelling was important, I disagree.
Right.
And having seen the film in its entirety now, you can do a flashback to a moment that you're in, but don't build it like blocks that are out of order. And you said exactly the same thing that I felt, which is we would cut to some other phrase, you know, some other time. It would be like 2 months later or 2 months earlier. And I had to stop and think and break myself out of the movie and be like, wait, what were we in before? Was that 1 month or
right,
4 months or
right.
five? Well, I don't even know where I am anymore.
Right.
Now, I've seen a lot of movies. I wasn't confused, but it jarred me from where I was and where the movie wants me to be, which is right into it.
Right.
And it almost felt like sometimes we see films and I say for sure that this is a movie for people who've read the book. I feel very strongly that this must be, because it was a lot of stuff there that was hinted at or alluded to that I feel like maybe it was really great in the book.
Right. And it's one of those things where they don't really do it in the movie.
Right.
They just sort of
brush it,
vaguely reference
it's the
it
fan service that we
so that
about.
If you've
right.
read the book, you can go, okay, they have that in there. And
yes.
and you know what that's supposed to do
right.
because you read the book. And right. so then it does it.
Yeah.
At least to a certain extent. But if you haven't read the book, you don't
yeah.
get anything out of that, because it's not even trying really to get you to get anything out of that.
It's got interesting setups, you know, as a person who loves all kinds of films, both old and new and, you know, art house and action packed, like there's a real fun Hitchcockian kind of hook here, which is the, you know, the observer.
Right.
And they see something. Now she doesn't see
it,
a murder
it,
in the background.
It tries in the beginning to be very like Rear Window.
Very Rear Window.
And then to like suddenly go, oh no, you thought it was
yes,
Rear
what?
Window. It's a whole other thing,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Which is good.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And good for it for trying to explore things, because I'm not going to knock something for being influenced by something that was fun. I, you know, a lot of the films I love are influenced by other things. So, but I think I told you this too, when we walked out, you know, the bookends of this film, I don't really care much for, but there's a portion of the middle that I liked very much.
Yeah.
And when we were in that portion, I found liking the film to be very easy, because everything seemed to be working in a way that wasn't trying to give me smoke and mirrors or cast a suspicious shadow on someone who might be really the bad person
right.
or allude to something that really isn't going to be handled and just dropped later. Like, it doesn't do that stuff necessarily. but it kind of gets in its own way for the first 30 or 40 minutes to the point where when I start getting interested in the film, I don't care about anybody.
Right.
I'm sitting there for a half hour and I'm like, I still don't care about any of you.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff.
That's a problem.
And you know, the whole non-linear thing, before we completely abandon that, you know, it's not really the non-linearness in itself. You could do this story and have it not happen in a linear fashion and jump back and forth. But, you know, you do it like 50 times a movie. And then it's like you're not doing that because it serves a purpose anymore. You're doing it either A, because that's exactly what the book does. And every chapter starts with here's a different time. Or however it works in the book, or you're just doing it because, you know, people, there have been good movies that were told non-linearly. So if I do it more, that will be better. If it was good, then if I just, let's just do it five times as much and that will be better by definition. And it's not, but
yeah, it's really, not.
but you know, the, like you said, there are really good parts in the middle of this movie, but it's almost like just watching the scene. Not in the movie. You get the scene early and watch it way before you see the movie and you go, yep, that's an awesome scene. But is that an awesome scene because I care about those characters or because I'm invested in something that happens in a story? No, because you just watch it as a scene and go, yeah, that's a really good scene. That's done really well. When you get to that scene in the movie, you should be involved in the story by then. And it should be a very different experience watching that scene because you should have a lot more going on in terms of what the movie has told you and what the movie has, you know, gotten you to be invested in the characters. And then, you know, watching that scene should be a different thing. And in this movie, it's not. It's the same thing. It's the good scenes are really good. And a lot of them are really fun. A lot of the actors do really great stuff.
They do good. They do good work.
But when you get to those parts, it's like you're not there. And a lot of it is, you know, so if anybody doesn't know the whole story, Emily Blunt rides this train and looks at the houses as she goes by every day when she's commuting. And, you know, she's very down right now. And so she's like invented this fantasy life of what she thinks these people that she sees, you know, do. And she becomes, you know, oddly attached to them. Then you find out why. And it turns out that it's because, the girl that she's the most interested in, is actually just the neighbor of where she used to live. And the other people that she also looks in on and watches from the train are her ex-husband and his new wife and their baby. And she just, as this, you know, odd self-flagellation, not knowing what else to do with herself, you know, gets really something out of just looking at them, and watching them. And she's very weird. And then after we get a few minutes in, we find out that she's also, you know, at this point, drunk and drinks all the time and has major problems with it. And then where the movie, I think, really goes wrong, because there's not much to not like about maybe the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, when we're just getting ourselves into the rear window thing. And then when we first start going, oh no, it's a little different, there's nothing wrong with that. But after that, it spends so much time just telling you that she's a drunk over and over and over. Like, there was a cut of this movie that was like 85 minutes and was probably really good. And somebody said, what is this, 1970? You can't put out an 85-minute movie. Make it 2 hours. And so they had nothing to do except just say that she's a drunk over and over. And it just got oddly boring. And it was, you know, it's one of those things about watching movies. You know, you can't make a movie without being pretty interested in the psychology of watching a movie. Not just like, I like movies and they're good. But, you know, it's like the movie's kicking the dog at you. And, you know, by the time you get to the 100th dog,
right,
it turns out the experience of watching that dog get kicked was boring,
right,
and didn't do anything for me and meant nothing. And we just keep watching her be a drunk because we keep having to say it because we've got nothing else to say because we're waiting till we get to the actual next thing that happens.
Yeah.
And we have to just keep doing it. You know, the way that the story works, a certain amount of giving her history of being a drunk is something you need to do, but it's just scene after scene of watching her be drunk, having excuses for us to look at her bloodshot eyes, having like one more trip to her stumbling and filling up her water bottle with vodka and riding the train.
Right.
And it's just over and over and over, and it doesn't do anything. And meanwhile, the movie's not really paying enough attention, I don't think, to the other things that we're watching. When we're in most of the scenes with the other girl who ends up, going missing. And
right.
That's like the start. That's the start,
yeah,
of the really dramatic portion of events. Right.
Right.
And we don't know what's happening. We see scenes of her with her psychologist, and we're not really paying attention to those early scenes that much,
right,
except that we want to say very generalized things about the character and what she's doing there and, you know, whatever.
Right.
And we look at her ex-husband and the relationship they have and his new wife, who he was having an affair with while he was still married to Emily Blunt's character.
Right.
And the phone calls that keep happening that are from Rachel, Emily Blunt.
Right.
And we have to do those things, but a lot of that in the early part of the movie, it's like we're doing it because we have to do it.
Yeah.
But not because we're real interested in really putting on display what's happening. It's just, you know, we have to have this scene because it sets up what happens at the end.
Right.
And so fine, film it and
yeah,
go. And then you move on to the stuff where it's good and they, you know, were paying attention to what they were doing,
right,
in those things, in a lot of those scenes.
Yeah.
And it comes off. So a lot of it, you're loving it and sort of being bored by it at the same time.
Yeah. There's stuff in there where the original idea of it, if someone were, you know, trying to get me to read this book, which I assume the book is, you know, just the movie, but much better and much more fleshed out. But even the movie, which is, you know, there's a lot of strange things going on. There's maybe an unreliable narrator because she is, like you just, you know, like you said, they make sure we know she's drunk all the time, you know, except these brief moments when she's just getting drunk, you know, when she has this clarity. But it's got, you know, tons of gaslighting in it. Different forms of abuse, you know, he said, she said, and then there's like this weird disappearance and this mystery that she sees because she is just an observer. And more importantly, she's so detached from her own life. She's an observer in her own life. She's not even a participant. And then she becomes a participant because she wants to help because she thinks she knows what's happened. And generically, that's okay. That's a pretty good thriller for me to try out as long as it's not 4 hours, you know. But it just, it avoids so much of what should be interesting for things like, you know, when we see the nanny, Megan, Megan, and she's with the therapist and she's really like sexualizing their session.
Right.
And it's the first session we see. And I think in the book, this is probably really effective and fun for the reader. But in real life, if I sit down and you just start hiking up your skirt and telling me all these things, I conclude our session and I
right,
know I can't help you. And this is only going to end badly for me.
The book, you have to think, so, stages it in
right,
a very different
and it
way.
Must be, it must just not be, you know, chapter 5, Megan at the psychiatrist.
Right.
And then, you know, she's got like the come hither eyes, you know, on all these. No, it must actually be like a process and a reveal. And
right,
there must be an investment there. And that's awesome. If there isn't, then too bad for the book because there needs to be, but I'm assuming that there is, but too bad for the movie because even though I've seen a lot of movies and I know this is the direction we're going in, You don't just get to jump.
That's not a thing, right?
You have to build something up. And like you just said, take away all the time where you're telling me what I already know. I get it. She's lost and she's an alcoholic and she drinks at every opportunity. Stop showing me that. You've done it effectively twice already.
Right.
And
I'm over it. Right.
And now by 10 times, I'm now looking and going, you should have developed this more. Because the interesting thing that is also on the surface of this film, and again, I don't know about the book, but it's funny when you talk about a film that the book material is so much better at or different. People who've read it and seen the film, they get like anxious because they're like, no, you don't understand. Well, I don't, because I didn't read the book.
But right, right.
At least the interesting thing here on the surface is you have three very different female characters doing three different, very specific lots in life at this point.
Right.
And forgetting like all the English major film analysis stuff of Maiden, Mother, Crone, all, but you kind of have these things working. But the three characters are so interesting because they're shown in a way that I saw, like everybody abuses them. Like it's got a weird tone here to the point where eventually when they're all around each other, they kind of abuse themselves.
Right.
Like, okay, tell me that story too. Like, don't just hint at it and then fly away from it. Because for me, on the surface, the story has like this interesting thing contemporarily where Emily Blunt is like a lot of people who do some sort of, whether it's social media stalking, like we're always watching other people now. Like
right.
We're really invested in spying on other people and, you know, Facebook stalking someone or, you know, doing whatever. And there's a culpability there for the responsibility that that has. And she finds it because she might have seen something that could blow this case wide open.
Right.
I explore that.
Right.
Have fun with that. Do something really interesting and put her in danger. Don't just do things that for me, whether they make sense in the book or not, like this weird guy that is following her, that might be the
right guy.
But we see him twice. We see him one time really ominously and suspiciously staring at her over and over again. And I get it. It's because she's drunk.
Right,
you know?
Right.
She just keeps bopping her head into the window, I'm sure. But later we see him again. And as the audience, we're like, okay, that's creepy.
But,
you know,
it's interesting. And
like, that's just so missed opportunities.
What really makes my disappointment in the movie that ultimately made me, take the rating down a few notches is that there are so many of these kind of interesting things about the movie that it doesn't do anything with, but you have to expect that it's going to,
right?
It's going to, if it says something that's kind of interesting,
that
it's not going to just leave that alone.
Yeah.
And like when we have the guy who is, who keeps popping up because he's on the train with her and he, you know, following her around, whatever, eventually he's in the same bar.
Yeah.
And it's actually potentially a very interesting thing to try to, you know, make some kind of statement with, right? Like she asks him why he's always following her.
Right.
And all it is, you know, it turns out that she's drunk and paranoid and whatever,
right?
You know, all she's got to go on is that the guy keeps being in the same place as she is.
Right.
But so does everyone else around her, right? They all take the train to go to work every day. It's all the same faces and they get off the train and walk to the same place or whatever.
Yeah.
And then she's like, why are you here? Why are you following me? I'm here every day, lady. How am I following you?
Right.
But they don't do anything with it. It's just an excuse to have another guy in the movie, because the movie shows you some flashback scenes early on. Megan is having sex with somebody in the woods and they only show you his back because it's like, aha, you don't know who it is. Except that there's no one else in the movie for it to be. So either the movie turns out to be this weird spin on what happens in the lives of someone who is randomly killed by a serial killer or something that has nothing to do with anyone, or we know who it is.
And they don't even
and they're pretending that we don't know who it is by not showing us who it is and having this other guy for no reason, because otherwise there would literally be no other males
in the movie
that we've seen.
Sure.
So we need someone else.
Well, we've got this stranger who might be casting doubt and who acts as the most it's not extraordinary, but he is just this foil for the irony of the film. he's watching her every day because she's on the train, and he's the bad guy, creepy man who's stalking her. But she's stalking all these other people every day,
right,
going to their house, like following these people. And when she suspects he's following her, like there's this real opportunity.
Then she, yeah, then she's like, what are you doing?
Right. How? Why are you stalking me? And he's right. like, lady, I live here. I'm around the corner. Like, right. what are you doing? But, you know, there's the strange guy on the train. There's the ex-husband, current husband, employer, who's the same
right.
guy.
Right.
And then there's the kind of sketchy, really short-tempered other husband.
Boyfriend,
you know,
husband,
boyfriend,
whatever.
Husband guy,
yeah.
right, who's probably really out to do everything. You know, and I'm like, all right.
Right.
I've seen this a lot.
Right.
And not even in movies.
And,
like,
and they don't do anything with it. And, you know, there are so many, like, hints of interesting things that clearly must be the interesting things of the book, right?
Right.
Even
right.
from, like, the very beginning, it's not just that Emily Blunt is watching these people or is watching Megan specifically and coming
right.
up with this fantasy of her life, but also that Megan is a person who stands on her balcony in her underwear
right.
when the train goes by,
right?
right? You know, that's interesting. It's
right.
not like she's spying on, you know, people who are like really desperate to not be spied on
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
You know, she's just out there trying to be spied on practically.
Right.
I mean, she knows a train goes by sure. every few minutes, probably right,
right
there.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But then it also, like, when Megan is in with the counselor, there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but you know, anyway, they kind of just leave that.
Yeah.
As far as Megan's thing, except that they want to talk about, you know, her being sexual later. But
right.
like when she's in the with the psychologist, and you know, there's interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
Even like to the point where, you know, there's a line that clearly has to be from the book where the psychologist says, "But you're just pretending to touch yourself."
Right.
That should be really interesting.
Right.
But
right.
it's not
it doesn't.
Because yeah. what happened is she just, as far as the movie is concerned anyway, right?
right?
Like, it's almost like nothing happened before that
right.
to
right.
to establish a relationship with them. And so you can't get anything out of that.
Yeah.
So the movie keeps, you know, giving you all these little pieces of
yeah,
interesting stuff happening
yeah.
and then not doing it and thinking that the most interesting thing about that is how it makes you unsure who killed who or didn't
right.
kill who or whatever,
right.
when that's not what's interesting about
right.
it, you know?
Right. And they do that a bunch. It's not just, they don't do it 100 times, but there were enough of those fumbles in the parts of the film that I found to be really uninteresting that really obstructed having a fun time with the movie and really got in the way of it, of
right.
it succeeding. The stuff that was really good, like we said before, is all the stuff in the middle when they finally just settle down. And it doesn't seem like the scenes have to be 60 or 30 seconds long. Like they can actually be scenes where
right.
the characters develop and the story reveals itself. And then there is a little bit of a payoff, if I'm being honest, I'm like not a forgiving, like it doesn't really pardon at all. But, you know, this weird flash forward and flashback, well, it's a flashback actually, when you see Megan in the tub,
yeah,
you know, and then later you realize what's happened. And then later you realize even more why in the beginning, when she's a nanny, why she hates it so much. Like that might be the most effective circular, like storytelling thing
yeah.
that they did, because it really does pay off later when you realize what's happened to her and why is she the way that she is.
You get a really good translation of
yeah.
her motivation
and
throughout.
And I'm hoping, God, the book, if it did this, then the book really is worth reading. And no wonder it was a bestseller. And if it didn't, then maybe I'm doing all the heavy work. But if it had certainly done what it did with her throughout, and it does try,
yeah.
you know, and to another and to a lesser extent, like I feel like that's the best example. The A step down or two or three down is when we realize what Rachel really has happened to her when
right.
she's been, you know, gaslit.
Right.
And that is effective too, but it just doesn't have the cleverness to it, or at least maybe clever is not the right word, but at least the precision to it. Like I still liked it and it made me feel a little empathetic, but it was way too late.
Right. Right.
Like at this point now, all I'm doing is seeing the tricky, like mystery suspense thriller ghost in the machine that you can pull on me, and oh, the person in the woods, like you mentioned, that we can't really see. Now we see who that is. I figured that out.
All right, fine.
You know, but
yeah.
Let's do it. And even kind of the thing that was strange, like actually what was kind of minorly annoying was the way, well, I don't know if I necessarily want to end the ending, but I thought that the ending was too coy and too pompous in a way. It was almost like we're going to solve things with a croquet mallet.
Right.
We're middle class bourgeois kind of thinking.
It seemed like.
Like it just seemed very patronizing
it seemed like I don't know you know if that's the exact way it happened in the book,
yeah,
right?
I don't know either.
But the ending, like the true, you know, true ending of the movie, it really felt like a scene that there were about 10 or 12 versions of it, and we ran it through some
test audiences
stuff,
right?
And
they loved this
which one did they like, and it was like, oh, I like that one, and
right.
And so stick it in,
right?
Whether it really serves a function in the story or not,
right.
But you know, people liked that's what happened.
Yeah.
And you know, it even had a certain amount to me of, you know, everything has to be like the most evil person ever.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? You could still have this story and he, you know, he's a bad guy.
Right.
He's, you know, he's clearly, you know, on the serious side of the bad spectrum.
Right.
But we don't have to just keep going until he's like the most evil person ever.
Right.
And one of the things, and I don't know if that's how it is in the book or if they kind of amped that up a little bit for the movie or whichever way it works. But if it is that way in the book, I still don't like it.
Right.
Right. It's still not good. You know, the thing that's weird for me is I'm just kind of over, you know, like all of the best superhero movies are, it's the destruction of the whole universe,
right.
If not the whole planet or whatever. And every movie with a bad guy, they have to be a sociopath and be the world's most evil person.
Right. Everything's always on the line.
And it, you know, it's like, somehow storytellers at this point are just fascinated with sociopaths.
Yeah.
It's like everyone has to be, and there's some like weird, I don't even know. There's some weird like cultural thing that's trying to be said about you can feel better about yourself because at least you're not a sociopath or whatever. Like people are still bad people, even though they aren't all the way off the end of the spectrum. And I thought once you get to the end of this movie, we don't need it.
Right.
We don't need to just keep saying he's evil even any more than we need to just keep saying that she's drunk.
Right.
I mean,
exactly. I mean, I could pepper examples in, but I feel like all it does is reinforce the exact same thing we've said, you know, this is an okay film. It's a little below the average line for me. I think that fans of the book will certainly go see it because I expect fans of the book are rabid about it
and are definitely
Are curious about
it. I imagine are going to like it. Although what I've heard is that there are a lot of people who don't like how the screenplay worked out.
Sure,
everything.
It's weird. I mean,
and you know, even before we just go, because we're already past our hour anyway, but you know, one of the things too, is that all of the things that I don't like about the movie, all come together to, you know, aid each other.
Yeah.
You know, like when you have like a good scene and you're going, hey, maybe this is going to be really good now. Then as soon as we move out of that scene, we have to time travel.
Right.
And have a scene we don't need and watch her be drunk again or, you know, watch some other thing. There's the one scene where, Megan's husband comes in and has to be like really abusive at Emily Blunt and you know, turn on his flashing I'm a nut job sign just so that he can and that scene doesn't actually do anything except that it lets her go to the police so that Alice and Janie can give her some shit about being a nut job. And it's like, oh, but I just was in the good scene. And then now you have to do all the other bad things over again at me. So I don't know. As I watched it, when I walked out, I was like, But I like the story.
I do too.
But it turns out that what I like is the story that isn't actually
being
the story
to.
That happened yeah. to me. It's the story that I can kind of
yeah.
pull out of it yeah. myself, right? I like the movie that I imagine someone else making
right.
out of this same right. story. And that I can't give you a lot of points right. for that.
And it's a little frustrating because I think Emily Blunt does a fair enough job once the director leaves her alone to pretend she's drunk all the time.
I don't know. I have to, since we haven't really talked about
yeah.
The actress specifically, that there was a level to this movie where it really became distracting to me that she is not good at acting drunk.
Right.
And that's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
And I love her.
Yeah. She's really great
in virtually everything else I've seen her in that I, you know, can think of right now.
Right.
All the movies I've seen her in, I love her.
Yeah.
I don't even just think, you know, she's okay.
No,
I think
she's
really good
yeah.
in everything. But I don't know what it, I don't know what the story is really. I don't know if she's never been drunk.
Right.
I don't know if no one on the set of this movie has ever been drunk or ever seen a drunk person or been around drunk people, but she doesn't act drunk.
Right.
I mean, she doesn't act like a drunk.
Yeah.
She doesn't act like a massive alcoholic, you know, who's
right.
really on the edge
yeah.
of just drinking themselves to death
right.
and getting alcohol poisoning and,
right.
and being in the back of the train
yeah.
and someone thinks you're asleep and you know, whatever.
I can't wait.
She just doesn't act like a
drunk.
Like,
I can't wait for her to get recast in the Leaving Las Vegas remake.
Yeah.
As Nick Cage. And then you have to watch
and then I have
two
to,
hours.
And
of
then
her
I have to watch
drunk,
it.
But.
Yeah. I don't know, but it was weird. And you know, she doesn't have to be great at it.
Yeah.
But once I start being kind of distracted by thinking about how bad this is, then it's gone wrong. I mean, she doesn't necessarily have to be win the title of
right.
best at acting drunk. But if it becomes a distracting thing in a movie where she has to always be drunk,
right.
then
it's there.
Then somebody involved with this movie
yeah.
knows
right.
that I'm right and didn't
yeah.
change anything and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we've pretty well covered that movie. So I really can't recommend seeing this,
yeah.
but I don't know that it matters.
Right.
Right?
If you're going to see it, you're
going to see it no matter what any critic says. That's
right.
just this movie. That's like telling somebody you don't really like the Harry Potter movies.
Right.
The hell difference does it make?
Right.
Everyone who read this book is going to go see the movie. And I think most of them are probably going to have at least, you know, like a 7 or 8 time with it.
Yeah, I do too.
Because it's got the basics there and it
yeah.
does a lot of things good.
Right.
It's also kind of like seeing a movie that, you know, the butler did it before you
well, I
go
knew,
see it or whatever.
I knew what we were in for real quick, just because the trailers before are a litmus test in a way for both the film you're going to get sometimes and the audience you have certainly. And when the audience we had were surprised and scared sounding and spooked and really exhilarated by the M. Night trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think just looks laughable.
Right.
And sad.
Then, you're
really
like, okay, we know where you
and
are.
And I'm like,
right.
this is going to be a big hit with this crowd.
Right.
Because if that is enough to awe them, then this is going to blow their mind.
Right.
And they would be in the corner crying if they saw Gone Girl. Like. So
right. And I would be interested actually to know if somehow we could get like a Metacritic of
yeah.
people who haven't seen it before, because there was clearly a mix in
yeah.
in our theater, because there were people
right.
all around us being really loud.
Yeah.
Who were talking about how it compared to the book or how this certain part was not like it was in the book or
right.
was like it was in the book.
Yeah.
And there were plenty of other people around us going, wait, who's he again?
Right.
And,
yeah. yeah. It was really interesting.
And it was clearly like the women going, look, that's this person. Just
yeah.
shut up.
Yeah. Be quiet.
Anyway.
Good scenes coming up.
Yeah. All right.
So The Accountant. Next week.
All right. That's way too much talking about
yeah.
this film anyway. So yeah, The Accountant and, as we said, looking forward to it, but a little nervous.
I'm
but
curious,
I have
yeah.
a feeling that we're going to have a better box office this week than
yeah.
$24 million. taking the lead. So the but I don't think the account's going to have any kind of trouble doing that either. But
I hope it beats Birth of a Nation.
But how could it not?
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. And one more time, we'll be back next week with the accountant. Please share, subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, and otherwise trick your friends into listening to us.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye.